Waikatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Waikatra AI. Welcome back. So today we're diving deep into someone maybe you think of as just an old 18th century thinker, Jean-Jacques Rousseau.
But honestly, his ideas, they're so foundational still.
Right, to pretty much everything we grapple with today. Individual versus society, freedom.
Absolutely. If you've ever felt, you know, that society makes you put on a mask or wondered why things designed for happiness often lead to inequality or feeling alienated, well, you're in Rousseau's territory.
He really got there first, didn't he? Identifying that loss of authenticity.
Long before it became a common theme.
Okay, but Rousseau's notoriously complex, even contradictory sometimes. So we need a solid guide. That's why we're leaning on Robert Wokler's work today, right?
Exactly. Wokler was a giant in 18th century thought studies, mm-hmm. based at Manchester Cambridge Yale. Just top tier. And his take on Rousseau is, I think, essential.
Why him specifically? What makes Wokler's perspective stand out?
Well, for one, he engaged with everything. The original French text, sure, but also Rousseau's musical compositions, his letters, the whole picture.
Okay, so breadth.
Breadth and depth. Mm-hmm. And crucially, Wokler offered a major reassessment. See, for a long time, especially during the Cold War, people painted Rousseau as this sort of forefather of totalitarianism.
Ah, the general will leading straight to tyranny idea. I've heard that.
Precisely. Wokler argued that was a massive simplistic misreading. He dug into the texts and showed Rousseau as, well, a radical democrat, a profound critic within the Enlightenment.
Not anti-Enlightenment, but its toughest critic.
Exactly. And maybe even the first social anthropologist, someone trying to figure out our social and psychological origins. Wokler gives us a much more nuanced and, frankly, more relevant Rousseau.
Gotcha. So, guided by Wokler, what's the core argument about Rousseau's entire project? You said he wasn't anti-reason.
No, not at all. Wokler's thesis is that Rousseau used reason, the Enlightenment's own favorite tool, to actually dismantle its core belief in simple linear progress.
So using reason to critique the outcomes of reason and civilization.
You got it. The other philosophies saw arts, science, society advancing, and thought, great, more progress. Rousseau looked at the same things and said, hang on, this is actually corrupting us.
And Wokler argues that all of Rousseau's work, politics, education, even his autobiographies, ties back to one central question.
Yes. One fundamental, almost agonizing question drives everything. How did we, humans, who Rousseau believed were born naturally good and free, how did we end up universally corrupted, unequal, and, as he famously put it, in chains?
Everywhere in chains.
Right. How did the societies we built for our own well-being become the source of our misery and unfreedom? That's the puzzle he's trying to solve.
And Wokler shows this isn't just a collection of separate ideas, but one coherent system.
That's the key insight Wokler provides. Politics, social contract, education, Emile, self-reflection, confessions. It's all one big exploration of that tragic conflict. The authentic, natural self versus the distorting pressures of society.
Okay, let's dig into that system. Wokler emphasizes starting with Rousseau, the man, the outsider. That seems important.
It really is. You can't separate the philosophy from his life. He was always on the outside looking in, a citizen of Geneva, but often exiled, clashing spectacularly with the big names like Voltaire, Diderot.
He didn't play the game well.
Not at all. He couldn't or wouldn't conform to the polished, often superficial Parisian salon culture. And that friction, that outsider perspective, it fueled his radical critique.
Which exploded onto the scene with his first big work, The Discourse on the Arts and Sciences. And it argued the exact opposite of what everyone expected.
Totally counterintuitive. Yeah. Everyone else is saying, aren't the arts and sciences wonderful? Look how refined we are. Rousseau comes along and says, actually, no, this refinement has corrupted our morals.
How so? What was the mechanism of corruption?
He argued civilization breeds luxury, idleness, and, crucially, a focus on appearances. It teaches us to perform, to be polite and sophisticated on the outside.
While hollowing us out on the inside.
Precisely. You become obsessed with how others see you, lose touch with your authentic self, and your moral compass goes haywire. It's all about the mask.
Okay, so that's the diagnosis. Then in the Discourse on Inequality, he goes deeper into the how. How did we fall from that state of natural goodness? First, he has to define natural man. And it's not Hobbes's version, is it?
No, completely different. Forget nasty, brutish, and short. Rousseau's natural man, or savage man, is basically solitary, simple, physically robust, and self-sufficient.
What motivates him, then?
Two key innate principles. Mm-hmm. First, amour de soi, this is just healthy self-preservation, looking out for number one, but in a basic, non-competitive way. And second, pitié compassion, or pity, a natural reluctance to see other sentient beings suffer.
So fundamentally peaceful and independent.
Pretty much. Limited needs, no real foresight, no language as we know it, free because he's not dependent on others' opinions or labor.
Okay, if that's the starting point, what's the catastrophe? What goes wrong?
Winkler really pinpoints Rousseau's identification of private property as the trigger. It's that famous line.
The first man who, having enclosed a piece of ground, bethought himself of saying, "This is mine."
And found people simple enough to believe him was the real founder of civil society. Yes, that act for Rousseau is the game changer, the original sin, if you like.
Because it immediately creates
Division, inequality, dependence, rules, labor. Suddenly you need others, you compare yourself to others, and this, crucially, unleashes a new psychological force.
this is the amour propre thing.
Exactly. And we need to pause here because the distinction is vital. Amour de soi is natural self-love, totally fine. Amour propre is different. It's artificial, social, comparative self-love. It's vanity.
So it's not just I need to survive, it's I need to be seen as better than others.
You nailed it. It's the need for external recognition, for esteem in the eyes of others. You derive your sense of self-worth from comparison. Am I richer, smarter, more admired?
That sounds exhausting and familiar.
Deeply familiar. Winkler shows how Rousseau saw this drive amour propre as the engine behind almost all social ills. Competition, jealousy, status anxiety, domination, conflict are modern misery, basically.
Wow. Okay, so if society, starting with property, corrupts our psychology, how do we fix it? This leads us to the social contract, right? Man is born free, and everywhere he is in chains. He needs a legitimate form of chains, I guess.
Sort of. He needs a form of association that protects everyone, but where each person, uniting with all, still obeys only himself and remains as free as before. That's the challenge.
And the solution is the general will, the volonté générale. What is that exactly? It's not just majority rules, is it?
Definitely not. Winkler stresses this. The general will is not the will of all. The will of all is just adding up everyone's private, selfish desires, usually driven by amour propre.
Okay, so the general will is.
It's the rational will of the community, aimed only at the common good. It's what we would want if we were thinking clearly and virtuously about what's best for everyone, collectively, long term. It's objective, in a sense.
And who determines it?
The people themselves. Sovereignty, for Rousseau, is absolute, inalienable, and belongs to the whole citizenry. It cannot be delegated to representatives. We must make the laws ourselves. It's radically democratic.
Okay, radical democracy. But then comes the really tricky bit, the idea that individuals can be forced to be free. That sounds, well, ominous. How does Winkler help us understand that?
It does sound ominous, and it's easily twisted, but Winkler clarifies Rousseau's meaning. Remember, amour propre, that's the source of our enslavement being driven by petty vanities and desires.
Okay.
True freedom, for Rousseau, isn't doing whatever you impulsively want. It's moral freedom. It's autonomy. It's obeying a law that you have prescribed for yourself as a rational, virtuous citizen.
So obeying the general will is obeying your own higher rational self.
Exactly. So if someone is blinded by their selfish impulses, amour propre, and resists the general will, the rational law, aimed at the common good, then compelling them to obey it is, paradoxically, forcing them to act in accordance with their own true, rational, free nature. It's liberating them from the slavery of their appetites.
Right. I see the logic, but it still feels dangerous. It relies on the general will always being truly rational and good, and on people being capable of recognizing it.
Absolutely. It demands an incredibly high level of civic virtue. Which leads us directly to the next piece. How do you create citizens capable of this?
Emile, the book on education.
Precisely. Emile isn't just about schooling. It's about cultivating the kind of person who can live freely in a legitimate society. Someone who can prioritize the common good over their amour propre.
And the method is negative education. What does that mean? Sounds like not teaching them anything.
Ha, not quite. It's more about protecting the child's natural goodness, amour de soi, pitié, from corruption for as long as possible.
Shielding them.
Yes. Shielding them from the harmful influences of society, its comparisons, its vanities, its artificiality, even premature intellectualism. You don't rush learning. You let the child learn through direct experience, through nature, through consequence, not through imposed social norms or abstract lessons too early.
So you let their innate goodness and reason develop naturally before exposing them to the corrupting world.
That's the core idea. Build the strong, authentic individual first, then introduce them to society, equipped to resist its pressures.
Okay, let's try and pull together the big themes Wolkler helps us see in Rousseau. Theme one seems to be the fundamental corruption of civilization.
Yeah, absolutely central. Modern society, despite its glitter, systematically undermines our innate goodness. And nature isn't just scenery for Rousseau, it's the baseline, the standard we measure our artificial social structures against.
Theme two, that crucial psychological shift. From amour de soi to amour propre.
Wolkler really shows this as the linchpin. That move from healthy self-regard to needing external validation, that comparative vanity, it explains so much of social behavior, competition, anxiety.
You can see it everywhere today, especially online, maybe.
Oh, definitely. It's a lens that's incredibly useful for analyzing modern life.
Okay, theme three, the quest for true freedom, which isn't just leave me alone.
Right. It's not license. It's self-mastery. It's self-legislation. Obeying a law you've rationally given yourself as part of a community, that's dignity. That's autonomy for Rousseau.
It really reframes political responsibility, doesn't it? It's not just about rights, but about active participation in creating the common good.
Absolutely. It's demanding.
And the final overarching theme, running through everything, the struggle for authenticity.
Yes. Living true to your inner nature, resisting the pressure to wear masks, to perform for society. Rousseau was obsessed with this, personally and philosophically. His confessions are a testament to that struggle.
Wolkler really brings out the power of Rousseau's writing, too. He coined some unforgettable phrases. Let's revisit a few key quotes. First, the one everyone knows from The Social Contract. Man is born free, and everywhere he is in chains.
It just instantly captures the core paradox. The natural state versus the social reality. It's the problem statement for his entire political project.
Then the origin story of inequality from the second discourse. The first man who, having enclosed a piece of ground, bethought himself of saying, "This is mine," was the real founder of civil society.
Chilling, isn't it? It frames private property not as a natural right, but as the foundational act of division, the spark that lit the fire of inequality and conflict.
And that direct challenge to his Enlightenment peers from the first discourse. Our souls have been corrupted in proportion to the advancement of our sciences and arts toward perfection.
Yeah, that's the gauntlet thrown down. Progress isn't inherently good. Sophistication can breed moral decay. The more polished the surface, the more rotten the core might be. Powerful stuff.
It really does feel incredibly current. Let's think about applying this. That amour propre idea and social media.
Oh, it's almost too perfect to fit, isn't it? Social media often feels like a giant engine designed to cultivate exactly that. Comparative vanity. You're constantly curating a persona, performing for likes, seeking external validation.
Driven by how others see you, not by inner worth.
Precisely. Rousseau would likely see it as a vast landscape of amour propre in action. His advice would be to cultivate that inner core, that authenticity, independent of the crowd. Easier said than done, though.
No kidding. And what about education? Emile's principles today.
Well, that certainly makes you question our current systems, doesn't it? All the focus on testing, rankings, competition, preparing kids for the job market.
Are we nurturing their innate curiosity, their moral sense, their resilience?
Or are we just shaping them to fit societal slots? Maybe even feeding their amour propre through constant comparison? Rousseau's idea of protecting childhood, of letting kids develop naturally before the onslaught of social pressure and information overload, it feels more relevant than ever in our hyper-connected age.
And politically, what's the takeaway for us as citizens?
It's a call to take citizenship seriously, not just voting, but actively engaging in deliberation about the common good, what is genuinely best for the whole community, beyond our narrow self-interests or group affiliations.
Thinking about the general will, essentially?
Yes. It's a challenge to passive consumerism in politics. Rousseau demands active, rational participation in self-governance. It's a high bar.
So, wrapping this up, my big takeaway from Wolkler's perspective is that Rousseau isn't some historical artifact. He's asking questions that are maybe even more urgent now. His diagnosis of alienation, of the pressures of performance, it resonates deeply.
I agree. And for me, the key Wolkler brings out is the integration of it all. Politics, psychology, education. They aren't separate boxes for Rousseau. They're all interconnected facets of the same fundamental struggle. How do we live together authentically and freely? How do we build a society that doesn't crush the human spirit?
He doesn't give easy answers, does he?
Not at all. Just profound, uncomfortable, essential questions. What are you willing to trade for authenticity? What does true freedom demand of you? That's what he leaves us with.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Accotra Foundation.